Hello, Mavs fans, friends. I am Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bow. Welcome to Pod Maverick. You are coming to us just after midnight now on Wednesday, April 8th. Whoo! The Mavericks only have three games left following this one. It was a 116-103 defeat. Josh, how are you?
Oh, we haven't done a West Coast game in a while, so this will be fun.
Like, I want to complain vociferously, but the Mavericks, like, there's we haven't had one of these in like 3 months. Like, this has been a good run.
Yep, I agree. And if they're, you know, yeah.
So the Mavericks got down 0-17.
Yeah.
In the first 3 minutes of this game.
This game was such a 2025-2026 Mavericks game all the way through. Just
every way.
It's the thing you said, what, 3 months ago, where you were like, every Mavericks game is they get their doors blown off in the first quarter. Everyone's like, okay, here comes a blowout, and then they make it close, and then they lose. And that's literally
every
what happened.
Game.
Yep, every game.
And it's a real question of, is Kid doing this on purpose, or does Kid suck? Because there's no in-between. Like, and you could really make an argument for both ways. It's very, very funny. So the Mavericks just start off, and look, you know, traveling west or east to west, you're playing at a weird time. The Mavericks shots just weren't falling early, and all of the Clippers shots were falling early. So if you saw the opening of this game and you decided to tune out, you probably made the right choice. But if you decided to stick it out, once again, I hate to admit, you were treated to a remarkably competitive basketball game. And so I'm just going to be candid with the audience. I was talking to my wife most of this game about like summer camp options for our kid. Cause
they were down 27-4. You're like, all right, they were down 32-9.
Well, and it was just, it was hard to, you know, it's like, honestly, this is hard to give a shit. It just really was. And so you're watching this one and, you know, Cooper finally kind of gets it going. There's a fun few things, but there's really nothing fun about this game because even the Clippers took their foot off the gas and were like, okay, damn it, this team and then all of a sudden the Mavericks are just all the way back in it. Like, they had nearly tied it before halftime, before a quick Clippers run sort of gave Los Angeles a bit of a cushion. But, you know, this was one of these
third quarter the Mavericks had a lead
and like a 3-5. Did they ever lead by 5? Let me see here. I feel like they, like, the lead got enough to where I was like kind of like sort of freaking out, and that's not accurate here. The Mavericks, yeah, the Mavericks' largest lead is only 3 points, so that is what it is. The Clippers took the thing right back in the second half, and then the fourth quarter, the Mavericks just didn't have the juice. Like, to tell you how ugly a game this was, the Mavericks won at one, were leading at 1 point, 78-77, while shooting 36% from the floor.
Yeah,
this was a heinous game. And so I check into our Mavs Moneyball Slack. We got our guy Joe doing the recap. I'm like, how the fuck are the Mavericks winning this one? And he responded to me like, the Mavericks haven't missed a free throw. When, you know, you go look at the box score here, the Mavericks were a preposterous 27-28 from the free throw line. The Clippers, they finished out a respectable 20-28, but at one point they were 14 makes for 21 attempts. And like, between that and the Mavericks taking care of the ball, that was really the only way the Mavericks were winning this one, because this was a game that was filled with, Kawhi Leonard is capable of being the best player in the multiverse in any given night moments. Like, Jesus Christ, that dude's good.
Yeah, and it was kind of a repeat of the last time the Mavericks and the Clippers played, where Kawhi and Darius Garland literally scored all their points. I think the last game, didn't Garland have like 40 and Kawhi had like 30? In this game, Kawhi has 34 and Darius has 22, which doesn't seem like a lot, but like literally no one else on the Clippers did almost anything. Their next highest leading scorer was John Collins with 12. Another guy, Derek Jones, had 11, and then Kobe Sanders had 11, and that was like it for their scoring. So like, it was kind of once again just those two guys killing the Mavericks, and that makes sense. I mean, Kawhi obviously makes sense because he's Kawhi. And then Garland makes sense because the Mavericks have no guard defense. Like, they have zero, like none. So this is like an incredible matchup for Garland. Like, he's going up against Max Christie and Ryan Nimhard, and getting, you know, there's no rim protect, you know, the center is Dwight Powell or it's Marvin Bagley. So there's just no rim protection. So it's a really, it's a really bad matchup for the Mavs and a really good matchup for the Clippers. And they really had no answer for those guys. Yeah, like you said, it was the extra possessions that I think the only reason this game was close.
Well, the minutes totals. If have you noticed the Clippers' minutes totals in this one?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
It's pretty funny. Like, this is a 48-minute basketball game. Darius Garland got into foul trouble in the third quarter, which was a part of why the Clippers, the Mavericks, got back into this. But they had no one. It's like
a preseason box.
They had no one play over 30 minutes a game. Yeah. And Kawhi Leonard scores 34 points in 30 minutes, including 6 of 10 from 3, and it's just, you know, oh my goodness. I mean, it's like you don't want to gush over the Clippers because the Clippers are stupid as hell, but this was very much a game where between the two, it's like between the two organizations, there's an understanding at play. The Clippers absolutely needed to win this game. They are perilously holding on to the 8th seed in the play-in for the Western Conference. And the Mavericks are just flirting with falling to like ninth worst record in the Western. I've not been paying close enough attention to Tankathon. But it's like another win to finish out the season for the Mavericks would be kind of catastrophic. Like we talked about it the other night against the Lakers, and I did not want tanking conversations to consume anything related when Cooper played such a fun game. Cause you watch games to see people do cool shit. We're going to talk about Cooper in the rookie of the year conversation after the break, but it's like, I had no interest in sullying that conversation tonight. I'm kind of more willing to have the conversation. Cause like the Mavericks falling to 8th was not great.
Yeah. And also Cooper kind of had a block, you know, it's one thing for the Mavericks to win and Cooper scores 50 points. But if the Mavericks won a game when Cooper kind of has a blah game,
which he did tonight, like, 25 points, 25 shots.
Yeah, and it was weird because it looked like he was about to let's talk about Cooper, because it looked like he was about to start another historic game, because I think he had, God, what did he, how many points do you have in the first quarter? He had double digits, and I think he was 5 of 9, and he started off really hot. I mean, he made 5 shots in the first quarter, and then he made 4 shots for the rest of the game. He was 1 for 9 in the second quarter. Like, he just fell off a cliff. It's really funny. The Mavericks played their worst when he was making all their shots in the first quarter, and they make their comeback when he goes cold. I'm not trying to say there's correlation there, but it was just kind of funny how that worked out.
And then as the game wore on, and this, you had to watch this to see it, because potential assists, there's not video of them.
He had some great passes tonight.
I jokingly referred to it as the Luka Doncic to Tim Hardaway Memorial Bricklaying Contest, because he had a few just... He had a drop in the bucket jump pass from the right wing. I don't even remember who he was passing to in the left corner, where it was like a bullet time pass. And like Luka made you feel like take that shit for granted, but you don't watch anything like that for a year. And then all of a sudden cool passes go, ooh, wow. And he hit whoever was shooting it from the opposite corner right in the pocket and just a brick. And like, look, I don't care. No, but the fact of the matter is, when it comes to like Cooper distribution, the last several games have shown his, I think, sort of understanding of court spacing and where guys should be, even if he doesn't necessarily see everything. I mean, that's part of the thing that makes basketball so fun for me, is like, you have once you play long enough, and if you're a smart enough player, I wasn't, but it's like you can just see it with the guys who are out there, is you can start to see where things should be happening. And you know, it's the equivalent of a quarterback in the NFL throwing open a wide receiver. And some of the things that happen with NBA playmakers, James Harden's really good at this. Luka, obviously very good at this. LeBron, amazing at this. Watching the way that Cooper's sort of passing instincts have kicked in the last several games, it's an undercard to his scoring, but it's fucking amazing.
No, yeah. And I think I know exactly what play you're talking about, that pass. I think it was Pudikaitis. Was it the one where he kind of like two-handed, he got up in the air overhead from strong side to weak side corner? Yeah, I mean, that was not to he who must not be named. But yeah, that was like a Luka pass. It was incredible. I noticed that too. Like, it jumped out to me. His passing's been great. So these last three games where he's taking a ton of shots, you know, he had 51, 45, and now 25, and he's taken at least 25 shots in all those games. He has a total of 4 turnovers in these last three games. He's been very low turnover the last few games, considering how much he's handling the ball. So that's awesome to see. And he's had some low turnover games when he's had some high usage, low turnover games in his rookie season. And it feels like he's kind of figuring that part out. And I feel like his passing is probably the most under-discussed aspect of his game right now. Everyone's talking about everything.
Right.
The scoring's easy to talk about because you score 51 points. Yeah, we're going to talk about his shot making. But to me, the way his passing has improved from opening night to tonight, it might be the biggest jump in terms of what he's been doing this season, like in terms of where he was day one to now. It's a considerable leap to me in terms of not just making passes and passing guys open, but just the possession to possession reads he's making. Like, it feels like he's making the right play consistently now in a way he wasn't in that first month or two of the season. And it's not always showing up on the box score. Like, I'm not just talking about like making a flashy pass in the pick and roll. I'm talking about like when to throw it, when to not, when to move the ball, when to swing it. Like, those little things that rookies don't always pick up on. And he hasn't been forcing the issue too much. So, yeah, I've been really impressed with his passing, but yeah, his shot was off to say the least.
And we just watched two games in a row where it's funny. My son's basketball coach, I talked to him about this regularly. He's an older gentleman and he coaches high school and he runs this program. I don't think he gets a chance to watch a lot of college and professional, but I just told him, I was like, Coach, man, you're watching Cooper Flagg, who is 9 years older than our children that you're coaching right now. And like the running jumper, like the floater that he was making in the previous two games was just, it's such a laugh out loud play because it's, nobody takes floaters anymore. I mean, even Luka stopped taking floaters to a certain extent. And some of the shot making that was on display in this last game, I want to talk about it a little bit more when we talk about Cooper kind of in the rookie of the year race following the break. But it was just, he was there because he wanted to watch LeBron. And I said, man, you know, you just watched an incredible game of shot making. And, you know, some of the basketball we've had the privilege of watching being Mavericks fans puts you in this place where you start to take some of this stuff for granted. And I don't mean like you just start to expect it or you're disdainful of it. But the level of shot making that was on display from Dirk Nowitzki, let's just use the Oklahoma City Thunder playoff game where he scored a gorillion points on like 13 shots. You don't see that much and ever really. I mean, a Kings fan has never seen that, you know, that one thing. And then we get Luka and then you get Cooper and it's like, oh my God, there's just some real fun stuff on display. So when he has like kind of a dud night, but still puts up 25 points, it makes you laugh. Makes you laugh.
Yeah.
Okay, quick break and then we'll be back. Thanks so much for hanging out here. We have somehow lost subscribers in the YouTube channel. I think that's because you know, I don't blame you. Anyway, if there are three ways to support the show. The first is to, you know, subscribe and listen to our show. Second way is tell your friends. Third way is to you know, listen to the ads. That sort of thing helps Josh and I. And if you're feeling extra generous, there's some links in the show notes and stuff like that if you want to send us money directly. Killer Cam, we see you down there. You're a hero. You're here for us most nights. We appreciate you. We'll be right back after the break and talk a little more Flag Rookie of the Year stuff because I've had a great time watching the conversation unfold. We'll be right back. Okay, Josh and Kirk here, coming to you late after the Los Angeles Clippers versus the Mavericks game. They play again tomorrow night. They head to Phoenix on Wednesday night to play. That's kind of their second to last road game of the year. And the Mavericks will, you know, that'll be a 9 o'clock game. Josh and I, or me and someone, will be talking. I keep trying to kick Josh off these just because these late games are ass. we'll see what's going on here. We'll be here. So tune in for that. Rookie of the year race tightened up last couple of days. Obviously the odds flipped in the last game, but the odds makers, as I listened to someone point out today, like odds makers don't really influence voters. Like that's just a talk of like a prediction market type stuff and it's downstream. But I was really disdainful of data-based people in the last show. And I think I said fucking nerds. I don't know if I'm being unfair, man, but I like
Con. You're getting Knipples. Fired up.
I like Con Knipple so much, but like I had Michael Pena, Ringer staff writer, who I'm friendly with, send me like two charts. And I'm just like, that's not why anyone watches basketball. And he's sitting here trying to tell me, well, you know, after Steph Curry, I think we need to be smarter viewers of basketball. And again, I respect that opinion, but like, I Raja Bell, his Ringer colleague, talked about the differences in role. And that is, I think, the smartest place to discuss this. Cooper Flagg has been a 1A option for the Dallas Mavericks since game 20. Con Knipple has at most been a second option. And that's where the break for this comes for me, to where I just think I'm not married to Cooper getting the award. I am not interested in hearing, as Michael Pena told me, Con Knipple has had a significantly better season. Like, it's just not fucking true. Watch basketball once.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's funny because I'm like looking online and the people arguing, and it's like people with Mavericks avatars arguing with people with Hornets avatars.
Which there aren't just that many.
No, I know.
Compared to the poor Hornets fans.
I know. It's just funny because like we are biased. We're Mavericks people. We're Mavericks. You're Mavericks fans, Mavericks media people. Of course we think Cooper Flagg. Like I made a kind of funny, you know, trying to be tongue in cheek tweet. Like I would vote for Cooper Flagg because I've watched every Cooper Flagg game and I've watched two Con Knipple games. Like, of course I think Cooper Flagg's been better. So it just kind of feels like we're talking, you know, kind of are talking in circles, but that's part of like the fun. Like if you're a fan, you should be wanting to kill someone over a rookie flag, right? Rookie of the year. Like that's like, if it doesn't fire you up, then why are you even in it? Like that's supposed to be for fun. Obviously there's a line, don't cross it, but
yeah,
we have fun. Our fight for your guys, argue for him. You should want Cooper Flagg to win every single,
this
damn
is objectively closer than Trae Young and Luka.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely. For sure. I'm with you on that. And really, like, yeah, Con's been awesome. And again, I don't think Con winning would be bad. Like, I don't think that would be like a mistake necessarily. But I think these last few games are really going to influence. Like, I just feel like it is going to influence people. Because they're going to get down to the end of the season and look at the stats. And I mean, Cooper is literally, obviously the counting stats, you know, advanced stats, Con is winning in terms of on off plus minus and stuff. But the context is so, like, you have to bring that up. That's the only thing I hope people consider, is just the context of their situations. Like if Cooper was in Charlotte right now playing with LaMelo Ball, like his efficiency numbers would probably look awesome. Not as good as
Con's. He'd be so good on that team.
Yeah, he would.
So good on, like, they would be unstoppably good with the seasons they've gotten out of LaMelo Ball.
Yeah. Cooper's efficiency would be skyrocketing, and Con's here would be, you know, probably it'll be a little bit worse, but Con's still a better shooter. Like, he would probably still be shooting threes better. But, I mean, Cooper has just been he's putting up more. It's tough because it's just archetype. Cooper has been doing like number one option stuff, which to us, like, that's the goal, right? You want that number one option franchise level guy. And Con is being a really good role player. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, do you reward? It'd almost be like giving a role player. Like if you're voting for all NBA, and you give a role player all NBA over like a star because the role player's efficiency numbers are better, even if the star is carrying a higher load or responsibility. I can't think of like an example off the top of my head, but that's kind of what it feels like here. But that being said, Khan has been so good that I think it is justifiable, but it does feel like the archetype of the role that these guys are playing in the context and the situation should matter. Like, just think for 5 seconds before you vote. If you swapped Khan and Cooper's situations, like, what would that look like? And if you still are like, well, even with that, I think Khan has been incredible and this, and it's like, okay, then vote for him. You know, he's having an incredible season, and it's not like he's averaging. Like, I feel like some Mavs fans are making it seem like he's averaging like 11 points a game and just shooting a bunch of, shooting really well on three. He's averaging almost 19 points per game. Like, that's a lot great for a rookie. Yeah. Like, that's totally like if Cooper Flagg didn't exist, like, and you looked at Khan's just counting stats as well, like 18, 5, and 3, 19 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. That is totally rookie of the year level production just from the counting stats alone. 100%. So that part of it is why it's like, okay. But Cooper, Cooper is Cooper. He's been incredible.
Well, and so, I had a, like my Michael Pena discussion, again, Ringer staff writer, smart guy, talks in just the calmest fucking voice imaginable, which makes him very difficult to actually argue with because he's like a nice person. I'm pretty sure he's a contributor to like Data Baller or something. The guy's Twitter handle is Reverse Enigma or at Enigma Reverse. And he's saying, the marginal difference in shot making, you're really underthinking what Cooper's contribution is, because he's his effective field goal percentage is nearly 62%. And I get it. Like, I'm not arguing that he's not a bad shooter, but it's just, I'm not saying that, it's a completely different deal to where, like, how good could Cooper be at finishing if he had an actual point guard? Like
data of what his numbers look like when he plays with a point guard versus the point guard only minutes. You keep talking, because I'll try to find that real quick.
Raja Bell of the Real Ones podcast swung through and essentially said the difference between having to and he says this as a defensive stopper, a former defensive stopper. He said having to guard someone who you shift your entire defense around to stop is completely different from someone who gets points off actions that are secondary to that person who I just described. And he's just like, the situation is completely different. And so for this guy, meaning Cooper Flagg, to put up 51 points, however many points against the Lakers, yada, 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 it cannot be looked down upon. And I get if you're wanting to say Cooper Khan played more games, because he did. He's been an Iron Man. And I'm fine. Like, I just need to settle on the fact that, like, I don't think Cooper has ran away with it. I think that saying Khan has ran away with it is very stupid and just completely lacks actual context. Because what's going to happen is if Khan gets this award running away, we're going to look back on this in 3 to 5 years when both these guys are in good situations and say, well, we just really decided to care about efficiency this year. At least lie to me and say, I'm voting for Khan Knipple because I think the Charlotte Hornets are a fantastic story. I think winning matters. It has never mattered in Rookie of the Year in the history of the space-time continuum before, but I want it to matter now. That's just a more convincing argument to me. I mean, I like looking at data. I'm not one of these guys. I do data work for my job, but sometimes some of the spreadsheets that have been sent to me, they suck. They're not convincing. You're like, oh, but look at this spreadsheet. Therefore, Khan wins. And I'm just like, shut up. Sorry.
No, I don't have Cooper's shooting numbers pulled up, but when he's at point, the Mavericks are minus 13 net rating per 100 possessions, according to Cleaning the Glass, which is very, very bad. Their effective field goal percentage as a team is 51%. Very bad, bottom third of the league level. When he's at the two guard, they're minus 3.9. So that's almost 10 points net rating better per 100 possessions. effective field goal percentage goes up to 53, which is a little bit better. And then when he's at small forward, they are plus 5.8. Now he's played the least amount of possessions technically at small forward, but the shooting guard, small forward stuff, the positional stuff and cleaning the glass is a little wonky. Like for instance, they count Cooper as a shooting guard, like Ryan Nimhard, Flag, Najee, PJ, Anthony Davis lineup. They're calling Cooper Flag the shooting guard in that lineup. Like, isn't it more Najee, would you think? Like, but point is, like, and the lineup with Nimhard, Flag, Najee, PJ Washington, Anthony Davis, so before Anthony Davis got traded, played about 100 possessions, which is, you know, it's like what? It's like a game's worth. So that's not a lot, obviously, but plus 29, effective field goal percentage 60. Like when he's not playing point is the numbers are good and good enough that it's like they're almost break even / winning those minutes. And when you consider that the Mavericks are what, 20, they're 25 and 54, and there's a configuration of their lineup with their best player, which is Cooper, that is break even leaning positive, which is basically what the Mavs are when Cooper isn't point guard. Like that says a lot to me. Like you want to talk about advanced stats and impact, like clear, like he's playing out of position. He's not a point guard. Nope. They're playing him at point guard to trial by fire and make him learn some skills and make him uncomfortable and try to develop him further. You agree to disagree with the strategy, but that's what they're doing, and it's hurting his numbers, but it's going to help him in the long run. So like, look at the context of what he's doing when he's not playing point and then put that back into Charlotte. So if on this Mavericks team where the point guards are Brandon Williams and Ryan Nimhard, and he's playing that well, not at point in Dallas, what would he be doing in Charlotte with LaMelo as his point guard? Like just you got to consider that stuff. And if after all of that, it's like, man, Khan is really good. I like this, and this, and the Hornets are winning. And it's like, okay, but everyone who's voting just has to consider that part of it. And that's all that's all I can really say. Like after that,
I enjoy it. It's been fun to talk about. I don't mind if you don't watch every NBA game. It's just don't throw solely. Like 78 games or however many Khan has played, is like that's a good fucking argument. Like it's a contextual argument that you can explain to a casual, meaning someone who checks, you know, it's like I have these wonderful the dads of the players who are on my son's team will ask me like Mavs questions. And it's like these are guys who check in on the Mavs. They probably watch one out of every three games, but they check in with them regularly. And they'll ask questions. It's like, if you can talk about that, you need to be able to have these conversations with normies and not be able to break out your iPhone to show them that like your to use Zach Lowe parlance, like your schmorps and your vorps. And it's like, just don't do that. Don't do it when talking, doing writing. It's actually better with writing. Talking is just so much worse. Anyway. And in the end, if Con Knipple gets it, like that's something else psychotic to fuel Cooper. That's fine. You know?
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Getting some draft questions in the comments from Lewis. Who do you want the Mavs to draft to get the number one pick? If they get the number one pick, Mr. Lewis, I want them to trade back. How's that for a fucking spicy take?
Wait, you want them to trade back if they get number one?
Mm-hmm. Acquire some more stuff.
Okay, yeah. So I was gonna say, give me your take. How far back? That's also part of it.
3 to 4.
Okay.
Go get somebody else in that top four. Like, I'm formulating some strong opinions, largely based on what kind of player I want in the draft. Not so much as what kind of player in the draft I do or don't like. Like, I'll give you an example.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't understand people who think Caleb Wilson should be a Dallas Maverick. Caleb Wilson is a hybrid 4-5 who is in like a KG type guy. You know who else is a KG type guy? Cooper fucking Flag. Like there's, if you think both of them can play together, that's great. But at a certain point I need shooting on my team. That's not to say I'd be super mad if they drafted him. I'm just saying that like, this is the last high pick the Mavericks get. So if they were to get like the number one or number two pick, I just want to see some finagling because they don't have a pick 2027. Of course, 2027, everybody talks about it being a lesser draft. Fine. I still think good scouting departments can do a good job. And I have a level of trust in Riccardi and Michael Finley that I haven't had in the front office in a long time. So I'm interested to see in what guys like that can do with bites at the apple. Now, if the Mavericks were to jump in the lottery, whatever they do, I'll be fucking thrilled is I think where I'll land, if that makes any sense. Cause it's like they're sixth to eighth right now. Jumping means a good thing happened. They've only jumped once before and they got Cooper. So I don't feel like being greedy. It feels insane. Everything else at a certain point is like a blessing. I just want them. I just get a little silly because it's like, I really love the draft. Like talking about the draft is fun for me.
Yeah. So you would give up a chance on AJ DeBanza and Darren Peterson to draft Cam Boozer and get an extra first rounder?
Or, you know, draft or back whoever. To like fourth and take the guy from Illinois. I love the okay. Waggler kid. I'll just say it's a silly small sample size thing. But like Waggler has a lot of work, but watching a freshman guard not be able, how to phrase this, trying to think. Defenses had a hard time speeding him up. And that is an NBA skill. Like being able to be patient. And yes, they lost to UConn, but I was still like, I was just impressed, man. That's all.
I haven't watched him enough. Well, so what if they went from one to three, got an extra first rounder, and they took Boozer? What would your reaction to that be?
Boozer doesn't thrill me, but I would make it work.
Would you rather them, if those are the top, you know, I'm just curious because you talk to more draft people, at least to me. So what would you rather have? Either one of DeBanza or Peterson or an extra first rounder down the road and Boozer?
Ooh, that's silly fun. Largely because it's it's preposterously impossible to even have happen. I think I would probably want Peterson because the high school tape was so electric. I'm just like, this actually leads into the very last story I wanted to talk about before we go. I'm like, the medicals concern me, but I also have to hope that at an NBA level, on a professional level, he'd be able to figure out whatever was going on. Because like this guy's athletic tape before he got to Kansas is Baron Davis. Like we're talking, oh my God, levels of athleticism paired with shot making, which I think you actually saw some of as a
guy. Do you feel like I wonder, the only thing I don't know is how much of his injury stuff is real versus sandbagging for drafts.
I don't think it's sandbagging. From what I understood is like he didn't go to an early like workout. It was like one of those, you know, choice workout, like something that coaches like you don't have to go to because it was before the season, whatever. He chose not to do it. And then he had a makeup workout that he got so dehydrated that it caused him cramping issues, which essentially bled into the year. And then there was almost like a catch 22 situation where he was constantly concerned about it. And I don't know if that's an actual medical issue. There's some weird things afoot. But I just, like, if you dip into this guy's high school tape, man, you're going to laugh your ass off. You in particular. Because if you were able to see the seed of the genius in Cooper, something like in this guy, you're going to go, why is he not the number one overall pick right now? I don't care what he did at Kansas. Seriously. Right. He's nuts. So.
Yeah. No. And shooting sounds good. I feel like they can't really go wrong with, you know, if they get in the
top. No, that's why it'd be so fun. You get into the top four, you just like, you make your choice and you live with it. And so one of the things we've been very honest about and consistent on is like, they just can't afford to miss with this pick. And like, I love the top 10. Our guys in Mavs Moneyball are like arguing over the guy at University of Louisville, for example, who has fallen because of like a back injury and or not playing in the tournament. And it's just like, give it to me. I don't care. Give me the chance because not everybody's going to pan out. Injuries can happen. Things go wrong. Saints could be set a Cooper Flag, but it's like, if you give me the talent, I believe it'll happen. Like, I'm not exactly interested in the University of Michigan's Yaxel Lindeberg or whatever the hell his name is, because he's quite literally 4 years and 3 months older than Cooper. But that's about all. Everybody else, I'm like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah, I'm with you. But you're right. They got it. They gotta nail it.
Do you want to know the last story that I wanted to talk about?
No, go ahead.
Go to ESPN.com for me and tell me what the top headline says on the right side of the page.
Actual ESPN.com or the NBA homepage?
No, actual ESPN.com.
Oh, the okay. Yeah, we can talk about this.
The Mavericks dispute Reddick's claim that they aired with Austin Reeves' MRI. This has become a national story very quickly because JJ Reddick claimed that the Mavericks fucked up the imaging on Austin Reeves. I heard nothing for days and was like, this is where I was just kind of quietly being like, oh, and this was like a story within Lakerdom. And I follow enough Laker people because I went to high school or I went to college out there and I just know people and it just appears in my timeline because I still follow Luka stuff. It's fine. The Mavericks have vociferously denied that this happened. And like, basically JJ Redick got on in front of the mic before the game and said that like the Mavericks imaged the wrong part of Reeves's body. So they had to re-image. The fact that they had to re-image is no big deal. The fact that the Mavericks got it wrong, it's just one of those stories that within the Mavericks medical foibles the last 2 years, if you think that JJ Redick is lying, you have a lot of faith in the Mavericks that is not earned. That's all.
I was about to say, I don't think the training staff gets the benefit of the doubt in this situation. I don't even know what else to say.
No, it's just, it's very, could the Mavericks please stop embarrassing me? Stories made me laugh.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, it's the fact that even if Redick is lying, like, it's just the fact that it's a story at all. Just,
why would he lie about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either.
Like, he was like, we knew Austin Reeves was hurt. It was a matter of how hurt. That's what the imaging was for.
Right.
Just a joke. I
don't have the biggest hot take other than like, how can you possibly give the Mavs training staff the benefit of the doubt in this situation?
Well, I mean, this comes across and like, this is where it's just like, I haven't had the time and I wish I did, but it's just, you know, the thing you said yesterday or 2 days ago about like the Mavericks adjacent media people sort of chastising fans and then this medical thing and then Mark Cuban constantly going on interviews and then the podfather Bill Simmons essentially saying like something to the effect of like, why do the Mavericks keep embarrassing themselves? And there's just not a good answer. And and luckily, I think what we're really lucky is that nobody's paying attention. Like nobody in the Mavericks fandom, you know, it's like the casual stuff. The folks who tune into our show, like they just don't exist. Only people who are paying attention right now are people who like you and me and who love the Mavericks. So speaking of that, we'll be back tomorrow night, or one of us will.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Or today. I mean, it really might be today. Yeah,
it is 24 today.
Hours.
Yep, it is.
I'm going to go post this shit to social media. This is giving 2020 vibes when we used to stay up real late when we didn't have, like, children of a certain age. And now we do. And it's just like, you were so funny because just like, oh, I'm going to be 10 minutes till the show. And all that did was give me room to get ready for my children in the morning. So it's like, oh, thanks, Josh, because otherwise I would forget to do this. Yep. So. All right, shout out to everybody for hanging out. Everybody be good. Talk to you soon and go Mavs.